You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
iHeart Podcast Update, this week on your free iHeart Radio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet-sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. And we're back with another edition of Feminist Movie Friday. And this one is kind of a departure because we've done superhero movies and horror
movies, yeah.
So we're trying to mix it up.
Yeah, I thought this would be a little more lighthearted.
Yeah.
As opposed to the revenge episodes that we just completed.
And funnily enough, even though it is more lighthearted, I would definitely agree. We have to put a trigger warning in here at
right.
the top for suicide and very brief mention of sexual assault.
Yeah. You were pretty surprised at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
You thought I tricked you.
I did. Because I've never seen this until right. Samantha and I watched it together about a week ago.
Right.
And I had no idea what to expect. Samantha, what you said something like, it's about middle-aged women being sad or something.
It is definitely one of those, yeah, up-and-coming middle-aged women movies.
Right. So for it to start in the way that it does with a suicide
right.
was a little surprising to
me. It's an origin story.
True, true. And we'll get more into the plot in a second. But for basics, this is a 1996 comedy. Comedy, yes.
You giggled.
I did.
Throughout.
I definitely did. And it turned out to be a pretty good choice of movie because of the question of revenge versus justice that comes up quite a bit. And we talked about that in our part one on women and revenge. And it was very, very gloriously 90s, I'll say that.
Oh, absolutely.
That was a fun little flashback.
I love those.
You love the 90s. Do you remember the first time you saw this?
Oh, yeah. So I do not because it's been a while from when it's, I can't even remember who, where, what, but I just remember seeing it. But I do remember that I watched this as well as A League of Their Own in preparation to the 2016 election.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah, and trying to get all really kind of inspired and, you know, not too deep into it, like dark,
mm-hmm.
but kind of inspiration level of, okay, we can do this.
Yes, and funnily enough, Ivana Trump is in it.
Yeah.
We will discuss that more
yeah.
later, too.
There was more, you recognized more cameos than I did, and yeah. I was like, oh, my gosh.
I was like, it's Gloria Steinem.
I was like, was that really?
It was.
It was. So,
it was.
Let's go ahead and get into it because it is a fantastic movie to me.
Uh-huh.
Your friend Marissa, great listener.
Yes.
She agrees.
Yes.
Thank you, Marissa.
Marissa says it. That is the law.
Yes. I love her taste. So for plot, if you have not seen this movie or maybe it's been a while, which for a lot of people probably has.
Yeah.
So this is a 1996 movie directed by Hugh Wilson with a screenplay by Robert Harling based on a 1992 book of the same name by Olivia Goldsmith. It stars Goldie Hawn, Bette Midler, and Diane Keaton as three recently reunited friends who decide to help each other get revenge, or justice,
yeah,
as they say, against their ex-husbands who ditched them for younger women, played by Sarah Jessica Parker, which, by the way, this was made after Hocus Pocus.
It was.
We did look that up. Marcia Gay Harden, who is phenomenal, and Elizabeth Berkley. You know her from Saved by the Bell fame.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the periphery, we have Maggie Smith as an NYC socialite, Dame Maggie Smith.
Right.
If you want to be nasty. And a cameo appearance by Gloria Steinem, which I missed until you pointed this out to me, Annie. And Ivana Trump, which she is kind of the all-encompassing first wife. Like, she's the what they call her, the original first wife.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just to throw it out there, it had a bit of the women in the movie as inspiration.
Yeah, and if you're like me and maybe you didn't get the title at first, it's because they were first wives. I don't know why I didn't put that together.
You didn't know this?
I don't know why.
I guess I thought that was obvious, but yes,
it
is exactly
obvious.
Why.
But I did not put it together, so just thought I'd put that out there. Despite mixed reviews, this movie became a box office hit, earning almost $200 million at the box office, and it definitely got a cult following, especially among middle-aged women. Inspired a musical and a television show. And a movie like this is still, unfortunately, pretty rare. A main cast of middle-aged women about their friendship, even though, yes, they do spend a lot of time talking about men.
Yes.
But, yeah, we don't really see that too much.
Right.
The movie starts off in 1969 with four friends, Annie, played by Keaton, Elise, played by Goldie Hawn, Brenda, played by Bette Midler, and Cynthia, who's played by Stockard Channing, who you told me was in Grease?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Very good.
I was paying attention. And they have just graduated college and are filled with excitement about their futures. They share a champagne toast, and Cynthia presents her friends with pearl necklaces.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I said, well, I didn't get that from any of my friends. That's okay. We don't need pearl necklaces. But they get these pearl necklaces, and they take a picture together. And Cynthia makes them all promise that they'll always be there for each other. And then it cuts to present day, and Cynthia is tearfully gazing at the picture, clearly implying that they have drifted apart. They have not, in fact, been there for each other. She's living in a super fancy apartment. Through a series of newspaper headlines, it's revealed that her ex-husband, a man Cynthia helped climb the social ladder, married a much younger woman, I believe like 2 days before.
Right.
2 days after they got divorced.
Heather Locklear.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. So Cynthia gives her maid her set of pearls and three letters to mail to her once close friends. Then she puts on this floor-length fur coat. There's so much fur in this movie.
There's a lot of fur.
The 90s, I guess. She gets a drink and a cigarette, and then she jumps off the balcony to her death.
There's also a lot of cigarette smoking.
There is. Also 90s, yeah.
Very 90s. So at the funeral, the three friends who are shocked reunite, feeling guilty about not being there for their friend. They go out for lunch afterwards, and after a few drinks, they all admit their lives aren't what they had hoped for. So they literally just go one. It starts at the very beginning where they're really nice to each other.
Yeah.
And just being like, everything's perfect, everything's perfect.
Yeah.
And then cut to like four drinks later.
Right.
Everything spills.
Yeah.
Annie and her husband are separated in therapy, which, by the way, she puts a positive spin.
She does. She
acts
makes
like
it
everything's
sound really
okay.
Good. Yeah.
And then actress Elise's husband left her for a younger actress, and she is now an alcoholic, reliant on plastic surgery. And I think it is really kind of funny because at that point, there was this whole underlying joke mm-hmm. about her going in for plastic surgery.
Right.
So she was making it even bigger, very self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
And Brenda's husband divorced her for a younger woman, leaving her in a financial lurch with her son.
Right. The three women each have disastrous encounters with their exes after this lunch. Annie spends the night with her ex-husband, believing that they're going to get back together, only to find out that her ex is dating her therapist, played by Marsha Gay Harden, and he asks her, instead of getting back together, that he wants a divorce. Elise discovers that her ex is asking for alimony and half of their marital assets, claiming she would never have been successful without him. Brenda has an embarrassing encounter with her ex when she confronts him at a department store, and his new wife, Sarah Jessica Parker, in a dress that Brenda had mocked earlier, shows up and makes fun of her looks and her clothes and her size.
Right. And then there's Cynthia's letter, which arrives, at you see at the very beginning, the maid sends it off for her, which inspires them to form the First Wives Club, as in the first wife left for the younger, second, third, whatever wife to get revenge on their exes, and they recoup. They also involve Annie's daughter, who is a lesbian. But it is fun because she does get involved to help her, as well as the socialite, New York socialite, Dame Maggie Smith, Brenda's mafia-connected uncle, and Brenda's boss, who is the interior decorator, who I knew from Perfect Strangers from the 80s sitcom. I know what I know. And that was the original TGI Friday lineup. Mm-hmm. They uncover that Brenda's ex had committed tax fraud, taking a lot of stolen merchandise, sold it off as his own, and then Annie plans to restart her advertising company by buying out her ex's clients. To finance this, Elise liquidates her marital assets.
With their exes right where they want them, the club decides that they want to be better than their exes. They want to take the higher road. They want justice, not revenge. So they coerce their ex-husbands into funding their nonprofit, the Cynthia Swan Griffin Crisis Center for Women, primarily aimed at assisting abused women. The club throws this opening party at the center, and we find out Elise is now sober, and she took the play that her friends had encouraged her to accept the role. Brenda reconciles with her ex. Annie bought out her ex and then turns him down at this party when he attempts to reconcile with her. Gloria Steinem is there, as is Ivana Trump, who says the famous line, "Don't get mad, get everything." When the party ends, the women, all dressed in white, sing Leslie Gore's "You Don't Own Me."
Yeah, one of my favorite parts, because that's every time we talk about First Wives Club, that's the song that hits in my head. And
yes,
Marissa actually commented in our story saying, are you guys singing that song? I think she said that. But yeah, it's also good to know, in this whole kind of thing, you do have different tropes, and we're going to talk a lot about it, but there's definitely gaslighting when Annie's husband, A, breaks up with her, essentially, mm-hmm. but then trying to also get back with her and then blaming her for his failures. But it's really interesting. I know we're going to talk a little more about it, but it's definitely like, I see what you did there.
We see it. Oh, I was so happy when she was like, nah, not getting back with you.
Yeah, it's also nice to see her get finally standing up because of the crew, she's the one that kind of just is a peacemaker and quiet and submissive.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk about that in a little bit as well. Kind of I feel like in a lot of these movies, the characters represent this one kind of magnified trait.
Right.
But yeah, this song, "You Don't Own Me," has been stuck in my head since we've done it. And I thought it was from Suicide Squad, and you kept singing it from this.
No.
And I was like, oh, it makes sense that it's existed for a long time.
Yes. Yes, because obviously it's been around for a while, but they do it as a trio. Oh, I guess they did it as a quartet, because they had Cynthia with them, because they performed it in college.
They did, and so this was them kind of reclaiming it at the end.
And every time we talk about it, I also sing it.
Yes, you do.
And I may have sang throughout the movie as we were watching it.
Yes, you did.
It's okay. So, this song was recorded in 1963 and was adopted as a part of the second wave feminist movement. It has been covered many a time.
Oh, yeah.
As you could tell, because Annie thought it was from Suicide Squad.
Well, that's where I heard it from.
Which it hasn't come out yet, but it was on the ads, right? The trailers?
Yes. And we do want to look into each of these characters a bit more in depth, but first we're going to pause for a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back. Thank you, sponsor. So yes, I feel like in a lot of movies like these, or even books, the characters are distilled into one basic thing. The pretty one, the goofy one, the nice one, and that always leads to a BuzzFeed quiz, like, which one are you? Through these main characters, you can see different stereotypes about women personified.
Right. And I think it also, each one of them that they play is kind of a stereotype of them as individuals that they are known for. Bette Midler is known for being sarcastic and sassy in real life. Diane Keaton, I don't know if she's ever been, like, just nice, but she's definitely the quieter, seemingly submissive one. And then you have Goldie Hawn, who has always been but kind of treated as a dumb blonde type of thing. And then again, I think often applies with women who are getting back at people. The Witches of Eastwick, which we talked about. I forgot about that movie for a while. And then had to go back and read the plot because it's been so long since I've watched it. The Craft, even Hocus Pocus, and oddly applied to witches, maybe. I don't know. That would just happen to be my theme, I guess.
Maybe.
It hasn't changed even in TV. If you think about, like, Sex and the City, and speaking of Sarah Jessica Parker and that kind of trope as well, there's four of them. They all represent very specific types of women.
Yeah.
And then you also have the new show, Dollface, which I've talked about before on Hulu. And I think that has that same persona as well. You've got the down-to-earth, sassy one versus the, you know, over-the-type, stereotypical Asian woman. That's a whole thing in itself. I think that's another episode that we should get into, is why do we have to represent women so monotonely?
One-dimensionally.
Yeah,
I could talk about that for a long time. It is interesting because you really can see this everywhere. And one thing... to get really nerdy for a second, when you're creating a character in Dungeons & Dragons, one thing they say is pick a trait, and that's your thing. And that's going to make it easy for you to know what this character would do. So it can be something as small as, I'm afraid of blood, or I get nauseous really easily. Right. It's just funny. I feel like writers do this a lot, where we pick, okay, you're this, and it's going to be easy to write you then. But okay. Let's look at our cast, starting with Diane Keaton's Annie, who provides kind of sporadic voiceover for the film. And I would say she's the nice one.
She's the what I would call the middle child, the peacekeeper.
Yeah, yeah. You said that I was most closely related to her. Like, if I took the test, this is the one I would get.
Yeah, I definitely did. I think I said I would definitely be Bette Midler.
Well.
I would be Brenda.
I like
except that. Not Jewish, but, you know, Asian.
There you go.
There you go.
This is the update, the reboot we need. She's Annie is shy. She's plagued by low self-esteem. She doesn't really speak up for herself. She doesn't really express her emotions. In Cynthia's letter to her, she said she most admired Annie's strength. And present-day Annie's daughter, who, yes, is a lesbian. This is the first thing you learn about her.
Right.
Anyway, calls her a doormat, pointing out that she lets her ex walk all over her. That's why her daughter was so ready to help her
get
revenge.
By the way, is her father.
Yes.
She just could not stand her own father.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Annie's mom keeps pushing for her to get back with her ex. And on the surface, Annie is very upbeat. I was actually confused at first because I was like, well, she's so happy, but what she's saying is so sad.
But that's the idea.
Yeah, exactly. But she plays it so well. I was like, is she really happy with this situation? But yeah, she is in therapy. And that's one of the first signs you get that all might not be well, where her therapist urges her to get angry and hit her with, like, what looks like a toy bat filled with air or something.
It's a styrofoam bat. Kids play with it. It's kind of like the Nerf version of a bat,
mm-hmm.
but it's just a large yellow and blue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The safe colors. Yes. And at first, Annie can't do it. Like, she does it, but she's sort of laughing. But then, with the continued pressuring of her therapist, she snaps and starts whacking at her with all this pent-up anger.
I think that's foreshadowing, too.
It is. I never guessed that.
Yeah.
She's always apologizing and taking the blame. That I did notice really quickly, that she's constantly saying, I'm sorry. When the three friends reconnect over lunch, she maintains everything with her relationship is perfect. Even when she reveals they are separated and Brenda and Elise are like,
they start laughing. That is,
yeah.
Which, by the way, would be kind of, not that that's not a nice reaction, but it could definitely sound like that. That's cute.
Yeah. Brenda and Elise have a more, like, oh, we've seen it, you know, kind of cynical view. She believes her husband is going to get back together with her. She's super excited about it when she gets the phone call. He instead, after they have sex, asks for a divorce. And then her therapist shows up, and it's revealed that she is, yes, the new girlfriend. This therapist, by the way, had been telling her she needed to work on her self-esteem. So Annie flips out. Her voice gets super high-pitched. She storms out crying. Throughout the film, we see her struggling with fear and expressing herself when they have to escape an apartment via window washing scaffolding. Yes, that happens in this movie. She's the one that's terrified, although I do think that is fair. When the group drunkenly sings a rendition of You Don't Own Me, the first time in the movie, she is tentative. She stops out of shyness when the other two attempt to let her sing by herself. But she does grow into herself with the help of the women in her life.
Right.
When she becomes majority shareholder in her ex-husband's company, she does it confidently. When her husband tries to reconcile with her, she tells him to go f*** himself. At the end, her mom says, you know what you need? Absolutely nothing. And during the final music number, she sings it joyously and confidently.
Right. And I think that was part of the thing, is she didn't want to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they would let her be seen, she would freak out because it was so embarrassing for her. She wanted to be the perfect whatever.
Right.
So she can't sing perfectly. She didn't want to sing out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting because she's one of those characters that does have the mother who is continually pressuring her to stay married. It didn't matter what was happening. It's just, you should be together with this man.
Mm-hmm.
I think, does she mention about her being older, not being able to find someone else?
She does, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which is absolutely kind of a stereotype of the mother.
Right.
Okay, so let's hop into Goldie Hawn, whom I love. She plays a struggling actress, Elise, who is, you know, very, very famous for a long while, and then she comes at an age where she realizes, oh, I'm at the in-between, which I know we've had many discussions on, you're too old to play this, but you're too young to play this. Mm-hmm. So what do we do with you? You're just out to pasture. So she once was an Oscar-winning actress, but has now been relegated to B-movies due to her unprofitable age, quote-unquote. Now getting roles for the mother. And when they talk about the mother, they say the words grotesque. That's how he describes the character. As opposed to the young, hot daughter, which, you know, that doesn't happen anymore, I guess. I don't know. I've seen many actresses now who don't age.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. I'm like, how do you look like this?
Yeah.
Angela Bassett, she is one of those, has never aged. I can't figure her out.
Yeah.
She says in the movie, there are only three ages for women in Hollywood: Babe, District Attorney, and Driving Miss Daisy. And right now, I want to be young, she says. Science fiction young.
Yeah.
And the first time we see present day Elise, she's getting plastic surgery for what is implied to be one of numerous previous times. And her plastic surgeon says something like, if you get any more plastic surgery, you're going to be able to blink your lips, which is funny. She's also an alcoholic and a smoker, in part to deal with the fact her ex left her for a younger actress, again played by Elizabeth Berkley. Her husband is asking for alimony and half of their assets to Elise's fury, which rightly so. Elise is insecure, vain, and consistently drunk. We do get to see her have fun with taking her husband's stuff, or her stuff.
Yeah.
As she would say, selling for $1 to Annie and giving him half or all in the end because he pouted. There's a scene soon after the first wives club is formed where she was working out on a stair climber and Brenda asks her, doesn't it bother you that you're never getting anywhere? You climb and you climb and you climb and never reach the top. So there's something like that. And of course she says, no, I love it. I just, this is when I can think, which
ideas,
I think, I think a lot of us think that way because when I used to run, that's how I felt. But by the end of the movie, she accepted a role in a play, which is supposed to be really phenomenal, aging gracefully, I think. And she starts dating her coworker and gets sober.
Yeah, and I did want to include that thing about the stair climber because it does remind me, I might have been reading way too much into it, but like of putting in all of this work and just constantly keeping yourself busy, but you're not going
anywhere.
Nothing is changing. Which I thought was interesting. And then, we have Bette Midler as Brenda, the goofy one, always ready with a wisecrack. She is financially strapped after she helped her husband succeed, and then he left her for a younger woman, Sarah Jessica Parker. That is a recurring theme in all of this, too, is that these women helped their husbands get to where they are.
Right.
And then once they couldn't, I guess you could say in a very bad light, use them anymore, then they left them.
Right. I mean, essentially, they do say this is their midlife crisis. Brenda is the one that talks about him going through a midlife crisis with an earring and a car and all of that.
That's right. That's right. And I guess part of that is Sarah Jessica Parker's character.
Right.
Brenda definitely has the best one-liners in the film, in my opinion. Goodbye, love, hello, Pop-Tarts was a favorite.
That's a good one.
Yes. She's resentful of beauty standards. She complains about anorexia and bulimic women able to wear trendy fashions and clothes. She is the most in your face. She says it like she means it and perhaps has the least growth of any of them. At the end, she does end up reconciling with her ex after he is contrite. Not that that doesn't mean she didn't have any growth, but I feel like she's sort of, I'm less sure of what her arc was as compared to the other
right.
two.
Right.
She is the butt of a lot of jokes, whether it's her frumpy clothes or her weight. At one point in the movie, Elise shouts at her, what did you ever win? A pie-eating contest? Best digestion? And although, admittedly, Elise's plastic surgery is also a source of a lot of mockery, so it's kind of like we're making fun of women for looking beautiful or being the dumb blonde, as you say, and then not doing those things.
Right. And just kind of at the end, one of the things that Brenda feels like she's accomplished is that she has lost some weight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she does say that, which, again, I'm with you. It doesn't seem like it's a big change as everyone else. But I think one of her stories were the fact that they weren't villainizing men.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying not to villainize men.
Right.
And so Morty
was
someone she cared for and still loved and just felt like he turned the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I think that's kind of part of the reasoning behind less growth for her. Again, so we do want to touch on Stockard Channing's Cynthia for a second, who kills herself 3 days after her husband left her and married a younger woman, once again, Heather Locklear, who's in it very briefly. These were definitely like mainstay 90s women, by the way. Before she dies, she jumps to her death, a swan dive slash swan song, since her last name was Swan. And she puts on all these trappings of her life. Like, she's wrapping herself in all the superficial stuff that ended up being meaningless, including the fact she's wearing heels, you know, in her pajamas and her fur and her drinking. Her character represents a lot. The danger of defining yourself and your partner, getting your self-esteem through the relationship. In this case, the husband she helped build up. Apparently, her fortune actually helped his business. Yes. They do say that. And how we teach women that their main goal is to get married. Again, very 90s values that we were slowly flipping the idea at that point. And how women's values in their looks as well as their age, and that without these things, their values go down. And I think a lot of this also had talked about that, how opportunities for women diminish as we age. I'm starting to get a little anxious about that. And the difficulty of starting over and the importance of female friendships and support. And Gary, I think that's part of the reason I do love this film so much. It does rely more on the friendships. And for me, I think we've talked about this. You and I both talked about this. We're not relationship people. That's never been a thing for me. I've never needed to have a relationship. Didn't have that many boyfriends. My relationships did not ever last too long. But my friendships have been consistent. And I've been fortunate to have really good friends in my life. And I know that if I need someone, they'll still be there. Even at almost 40, where we're coming up on middle age, me, I'm coming up on middle age, everybody else is younger. I can still see them on a weekly basis. I can still hang out with them and consistently call them, as where my mother, she lost contact with all of her friends because it was a different time and age and everybody was concentrating on family. No one had the access, like the internets. And I think that's a really different. But I do love that even in the 90s, they saw it as an important conversation to be had about things fall apart. Oftentimes, friendships outlast most of these things, obviously.
And I'm glad to see stories like this, because we don't see that many of female friendships where that's like the first and foremost thing of the story. And for me, my friendships with women in my life have been so valuable, like more than anything. And I'm so, so lucky that I have that. And the support is hard to overstate. And speaking of supporting women, we did want to talk about some of the main tropes in this movie, including that one. But first, we're going to pause for one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
the last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Mm. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. And we did want to get into some themes of this movie, some tropes, and perhaps the biggest one being women supporting women.
Right.
And the power in that, because that, I mean, that's the whole thing, is that their relationships fall apart, their lives fall apart, but they have this supportive group of friends who not only are they trying to get revenge and get justice, but like in the case of Elise, where they're like, no, you should take this play.
Right.
They're trying to help each other make healthier and more successful life decisions. And I love seeing how Annie's daughter supports her, and ultimately her mom does too, that there's three generations of women supporting each other and all the stuff that, yeah, these women are able to accomplish with each other's help. And they, for the most part, are building each other up and giving advice, believing in each other, and helping each other succeed.
Right. So that is the idea behind this. That they can't accomplish their glow up or groove back, mm-hmm. you know, as we would throw it back, without the help of each other, which is only highlighted by the fact that their downfall, their loss of self, was partially due to the loss of each other. And I think that's really important to talk about. Not necessarily that it hinges on other people,
yeah.
but the fact that we do have to have support and others to push us. And a lot of times it's, we do grow apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reality. What the friends I had 20 years ago, I may not have now.
Mm-hmm.
But the friends I've had, you know, in this past have remained friends because we were able to grow up together or change together. And even though things can separate you, a lot of the times when you find those people, that core group of people, your people,
mm-hmm.
it is. It's an amazing thing, the things that you can do, things that you can get support from. Just being here was, you know, being able to do this. Is everything to do with the fact that the people I know are supporting me or have pushed me to say, yeah, these are important things to talk about. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a very significant part of who we are. And again, we would have to say this has to do a lot with privilege. So this was very white perspective, obviously, white rich
mm-hmm. yeah.
perspective, because we don't have an actress who's going to sell millions of dollars worth of things to us for a dollar. Right. Would be lovely.
Oh,
I mean, I would love
God,
that.
It would be.
And then give us their fortune. But at the same time, the main idea of it's a nice feel of being able to see a group of friends who've been there for each other before come back together now.
Yeah, and the argument they have, I also think, was really enlightening because there is a layer of, oh, yeah, we've been trained to tear down other women because the things they're picking out on each other are largely looks-based. But, like, underneath it all, there still was a layer of, I don't know, caring. Because Brenda was worried about Elise's drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely said things that were not supportive at all. But there was this sort of, at the core of it, that they still did care.
Right.
And speaking of women tearing down other women, we got to talk about the other woman.
Right.
The trope of that. Yeah, because we see that play out big in this movie. And yeah, we were talking about this after the movie ended and how much blame we could place on these other women. So in the case of Sarah Jessica Parker Shelley, she is a gold digger. She's a stereotypical gold digger. She's manipulative, but unintelligent. The beautiful ditz. Many, many jokes play out at her expense as the club, along with the socialite Gunilla Goldberg, which is Maggie Smith, trick her multiple times.
Right. And I think for me, I keep going back to the fact that it's so hocus pocus, like her same character almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of is. But then you also have Marcia Gay Harden's Dr. Leslie Rosen. Annie's and her ex's therapist who claims to be helping with Annie's self-esteem, which to me is definitely the idea of gaslighting, not necessarily from Marsha, not necessarily from the therapist's mm-hmm. perspective maybe, because we don't know the conversations other than get your self-esteem, you need to be stronger type of perspective.
Yeah.
But her husband, once again, continually saying, you always do this to me, you always make me feel this way, you always da-da-da.
Right.
And you're like, no, buddy, that's not.
Yeah.
Token, definitely, idea of gaslighting.
Yeah.
The beginnings of, and her taking that blame and her believing that blame.
Mm-hmm.
And believing that up until she exits after finding out the therapist is the new woman.
Yeah.
And starts screaming her non-apologies.
Yeah.
That was a great scene.
Yeah. Like, I'm so sorry I cared for you and right. I did everything, supported you. I'm so sorry.
Sorry. Like, she just ends it. You gotta love her doing that. I love her doing that.
I love, too, how the therapist is like, you've got to let her express herself.
Right. And then we have the cameo by Elizabeth Berkley, a young, naive actress. And you can really see the power dynamic between her and Elisa's ex-husband, who is offering her all of these lead roles.
Yeah.
She's actually a fan of Elisa and is at her play at the end. So she really does seem just like a super young, naive, and maybe flattered that an older man is interested in her, who is also going to help her excel in her career.
Right.
And believing that she is, and maybe she is, but he is telling her she's good at all of these things, and if you continue to be these things, you know, I'll help your career, whatever, whatnot. But she comes in very naively, not even understanding, it seems, the relationship between Elise and the ex-husband. Like, she just kind of, oh my God, I'm so glad you're here.
Like, it doesn't even occur to her that Elise might not be super happy to meet her.
Exactly. And I feel like that's definitely a trope, but at the same time, at least it's not versus woman versus woman.
Yeah.
And that did make me feel a little better, because you and I were talking about that. I'm like, I hate that whole idea that when there's a downfall in a relationship, it's the other woman's fault.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing, hey, that dude.
Yeah.
It's the common denominator in this whole scenario.
Right.
And again, she is supposed to be 16, so you could talk about how in the world is she a 16-year-old that's living with this man and no one notices. That's a whole other conversation.
It is. I did really appreciate that she showed up at the play at the end. I thought that was a nice touch.
Cheering very, very loud.
Yeah, and she seemed to be really into it. There is still this sense that these women are playing the game, that the only avenue for women to succeed is by using their youth and their beauty to attract a man. It's not great that they play into it and tear each other down, and one day they'll be competing with younger, prettier women, too. They'll be like second wives.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of hard to blame them, and I'm not condoning it at all, but the patriarchal system we live in, it really does pit us against each other. I guess I can see why it happens.
I mean, that's the whole idea behind anti-feminists in general. And I think TERFs, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Also, as the audience, I'd argue we're meant to tear down these women at least a little bit. We're poking fun at Annie's weakness, at Elisa's plastic surgery, at Brenda's frumpiness.
Yeah, absolutely. It's supposed to be the obvious of why they were left. Again, something we see in society. We have to find a reason to blame. What did you do wrong? Why did he leave you? And don't get me wrong, there's definitely two that tangos.
Yeah.
It definitely takes two to tango.
Mm-hmm.
Let me try that one again. I did it. And there's a whole other perspective that we might not see, we don't see. But then there's also that whole keep yourself together, keep, like, all of these things, make yourself presentable, be desirable, whatever. And I have seen more and more of people flipping that switch to men or the other partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people say that to them as well. And I think that's unnecessary in general. It's traumatic in itself to try to blame whatever. It's something maybe you can't help or something that you don't like about yourself either. It's not something that you want as a part of the reason that they left. So.
Right. I guess that kind of transitions into our next thing we wanted to talk about, which is having it all.
Right, which is a huge theme of the 90s for a lot of women.
That's true.
That's another true. Theme, yeah. Because the whole idea of having it all is it's impossible. It's not going to happen. They start out so hopeful for their future, having just graduated college in the 60s, which I'm sure was a big feat. But again, these were very privileged women, once again, white women. So we're able to get their education pretty easily, it seemed, with their pearls.
Yes.
And champagne to celebrate.
Yes.
But then we see them as adults, and they obviously do not have it all.
Yeah.
It's a whole scenario of the young, naive idea of what it is to dream for the end all, to have perfect family lives with a princess-like marriage. Obviously, you see that dwindling away. And then you do see a lot about divorce rates in general and the falling apart of the American family, whether it's set up by lies.
Set up by lies. That's a Hallmark movie or something.
Is it?
No, but it should be.
It should be. Let's go write one now.
Okay.
Or whether it's just this level of expectations that you're not meeting in front of other people. Mm-hmm. So kind of like whether it's, I'm a stay-at-home mom, but I don't want to be, but I'm supposed to be. Or I am a career woman, but I don't want to be. You know, any of those perspectives that you're supposed to have it all and be all, running that perfect home, being the perfect wife, having the perfect career.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah. And it's a double-edged sword, too, because you're going to get blamed for being at work too much or not enough, or being at home too much or not enough. Yeah. So they were all successful. They all got married. Some had kids, and they helped their husbands succeed, only for these husbands to go for a younger woman once they had been established with the help of their first wives. One tries to keep everyone happy at the expense of herself. One tries to hold on to her youth at the expense of herself. One lashes out at everyone at the expense of women everywhere. They all define themselves as wives. So when that was gone, after everything they'd given up, the best years of their lives, as is said in the movie more than once, they didn't know what to do with themselves. They lacked purpose. Their happiness had always been second. To see them reclaim themselves, to take what's theirs, and to find happiness and success in themselves and their friendships is really rewarding. They can't have it all, but with the help of each other, they get closer to having what they truly want.
Is that a tagline?
I'm here.
It should be.
I can write.
That's awesome.
I can write things. and we did want to talk about revenge versus justice as well, because it's interesting how at the end they turn their desire for revenge outward. They make it into something to help other people. They keep emphasizing this is not revenge, this is justice. And their decision to start a nonprofit is a way of turning their desire for revenge into justice and honoring their friend that started this whole thing that brought them back together, which is especially interesting in light of what we talked about in our Women and Revenge episode about how women are more likely to channel their desire for revenge into altruistic purposes.
Right. And I think there is a lot to be said when it comes to the female perspective of revenge and justice. Revenge is an all-out, maybe balls-out, hell and brimstone, while justice is restoring the balance. I think if we look more deeply into it, for a feminist take, it's trying to get balance, as we would say that's what restoring implies. Like, you're getting it back to what it was.
Right.
But I think we know that it isn't there. There's a tip of the scale that changes the perspective. And if we look at it for the first time, it's not that they're getting balance. It's just they're trying to find balance and put justice into place because they never had that balance to begin with.
Right.
So it's a whole different level.
Yeah, it was always an unequal situation. And to close out here, because we've had a surprising amount to say about First Wives Club, or maybe not, I don't know. We did want to touch on some real world stuff, including Ivana Trump, because after we watched this, we were curious about her being in the movie and what she said, and we looked it up.
Because I do remember the whole trope about the fact that she was the original first wife and that it was a huge tabloid extravaganza when the divorce went down and what was happening and the new mistress, Marla Maples, coming in. And, yeah, small bit of history because, honestly, again, I forgot about the whole mess. I just remember it being a big deal. I was really young at the point. You weren't born yet, probably. A deposition relating to the divorce, she accused Donald Trump of rape and pulling out handfuls of her hair. And in a book written by Harry Hurt, Lost Tycoon, The Many Lives of Donald J. Trump, Ivana Trump confirmed that she had felt violated, quote unquote. However, in a statement provided by Donald J. Trump and his lawyers, Ivana Trump stated that she did use the word rape, but that she did not want her words to be interpreted in a literal or criminal sense, which isn't very comforting in any way. And the divorce was granted in 1990 on the grounds of cruel and inhumane treatment by Mr. Trump. So that was actually written into the reasoning for divorce. A condition of the settlement was that she wouldn't talk about their marriage without his permission.
Ugh.
So, not to say too much, but this has obviously a lot of indications of all the accusations we see today.
Yeah.
It's been happening. It's been said. It's been said since 1990.
Yeah.
In official court documents. Mm-hmm. And I think it was important to remember, unfortunately, that this happened, because I completely did not realize that statement was even written out.
Yeah.
As a part of the reason for their divorce. It was kind of funny at that time, because everybody was making jokes about the fact that Donald was leaving her for a younger woman, Marla Maples, and all of these things came out about how he cheated and what he wanted and feeling like a failure, because I think this was the beginning of him losing everything.
Mm.
And so, again, kind of having a breakdown and going for the younger woman. That's exactly that trope. But then how serious
yeah.
the situation was at the time, and everybody was able to disregard and kind of forget about that history.
Yeah.
Until I believe it was brought up again during the elections, but it was a small blip yeah. that everybody ignored.
Yeah. And then another person we want to talk about very briefly is Harvey Weinstein, just because it's really hard not to see some disturbing parallels between him and the situation with the young actress
right.
in the movie. So it is odd to watch that movie now with
right.
like our eyes, our modern eyes, and knowing what happens.
Right. And it was treated so lightly at that
yeah,
point in time.
Like,
again,
that was just a thing.
Both of those situations mm-hmm. were treated so lightly. Mm-hmm. And then today you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
I did not. Ooh, it was bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Gloria Steinem was there.
And then Gloria Steinem.
So,
I mean, come on.
That's about what we have to say on First Wives Club. If you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix. And we would love to hear from you. What should be our next movie for Feminist Movie Friday? Well, we're doing Mulan next.
I was going to say,
spoiler.
We have one. Yeah.
Get excited for that.
I'm excited for that one.
But after that, what
yeah,
should we do?
We definitely are definitely going to come back for Heathers.
Yes.
And I think we're going to do one over Witches and like all together with The Craft, which is a piece
of Eastwick,
and Hocus Pocus possibly, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of interweaving.
True. And The Witches? There's a lot of movies we could talk about in there.
Yeah, I guess I'd see that as such a... Because they're all women.
Yes. Interestingly.
They're scary women. I love them.
I love it too. But in the meantime, you can email your suggestions to us at... our email at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at momstuffpodcast or on Instagram at stuffmomnevertoldyou. Thanks as always to our super producer, Andrew Howard. And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.